You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
Listening to another edition of the Daily Nationalist on Radio Albion. Of course, this is Matthew Johnson. On the 28th of March, 2024, and it shouldn't surprise anybody really, that we're going to talk about the Ukrainian conflict, especially things that have occurred more recently, but in a way that actually deals with reality. Both the factual reality as well as the logical reality. And what we're looking at is the meltdown of NATO as a military and as a political body. When the regime has to resort to terrorism and endless threats, including against its allies, for not doing enough, you're not dealing with a stable situation, and it hasn't been stable for a very long time. And the response to these acts of terror, acts against a civilian population for the purpose of destroying the civilian population in Belgorod, among other places, the blowback has been pretty obvious and expected. You know, Russian attacks, very much well-earned, provoked, although Russia's tried to avoid it for 2 years now, are increasing across Ukraine. But attacking Ukrainian war-making infrastructure is sort of like attacking Haiti. Most of it's destroyed anyway. And what makes matters worse, of course, Russians have tried from the very beginning to minimize civilian casualties, even at their own expense. But of course, most of this infrastructure was built by Russia anyway. We're talking about things like energy facility. I mean, throughout, right up until, and even a little bit after the shooting began, Russia was still subsidizing energy imports. And really, this hasn't happened since the first half of 2023. And there's certainly plenty of people who say this should have been done a long time ago. The headquarters of what there is of Ukrainian intelligence, which is a branch office of the CIA, were destroyed. And it's not an exaggeration to say this is a new, more intense phase in this conflict. I've been talking about the official policy of terror from Washington and Kiev from the very beginning. You know, idiots like Macron talking about retaking Crimea, despite the fact that the only actions in that regard have been against civilian targets. Kiev despises these people. And although they don't have this capacity, they never did have this capacity, but ethnic cleansing is the only thing that they're interested in. Kiev's been attacking civilian targets long before 2022. One of Russia's great priorities has been, of course, to protect civilian targets on both its undisputed and disputed territories. It's been a huge, and that's why this has been such an outrageous event, suggesting utter desperation. But that's always been the case. And this is a high-intensity bombing against critical infrastructure targets. Russia has never sought to take Ukraine, never sought to take Kiev, but certainly to rescue and defend the Russian-speaking populations of the East, practically every one of whom wants to be a part of the Russian Federation. And now, of course, they are. The Ukrainian military and the militias, well aware of this, deliberately built their bases initially in urban areas. Now, critical infrastructure, no matter what kind of rules of engagement you look at, These are all legitimate targets. But if, unfortunately, ordinary citizens, regardless of their background, are harmed, and of course, the Ukrainian energy supply was barely there to begin with, but Moscow did its best to prevent this. And some of my information is coming directly from the BRICS website, but and by people who I know and people who I trust, that these border areas have been attacked, you know, Kursk and Belgorod and other places, let alone Crimea and the far east of Ukraine. Russia now has no choice. And now it's one thing to say that they should have done this a long time ago. It's one thing to say that the command facilities, decision-making centers should have been taken care of a long time ago. But these are targeted, unlike the Ukrainian version. They've destroyed the headquarters of both the SBU, which is your overarching, you know, like the old KGB that it replaced, and the GUR, which is strictly military intelligence. Information is scanty. You can't believe anything coming out of the Western press. But this is, you know, makes matters even more miserable for Kiev. It's been artificially propped up now for many years, but especially during the war, and especially since they're using these hypersonic missiles now, which is impossible. You know, you can't really do anything about. So you're talking about the death of high-level people here. Now, we all know the Krokus City Hall, 130 civilians. These are civilians in just outside of the actual city center of Moscow. And, of course, the regime is pretty predictable because these are actually employees of the regime using Tajik migrants. But that fact has nothing to do with why they were doing it. And, you know, the ISIS nonsense. ISIS, of course, is a creation of Western intelligence, military and otherwise, because, you know, they only attack enemies of the U.S. and Israel. Everything that's going on in Gaza, the Israeli situation, this is what ISIS thinks is important to do. So this is nonsense on numerous levels. But there have been a few writers, especially Serbian ones, who've noted that the attacks don't bear the marks of the so-called Islamic Wahhabi attacks, bombings. There was no use of suicidal methods here. Nothing was released beforehand that would suggest this in any normal way. Very obviously, those who committed the murders attempted to flee right back to Ukraine. And this explains the Russian response. Of course, Russia knows infinitely more about Ukraine than pretty much anyone else, including Kiev, and recognizes exactly what's going on. The same exact thing occurred in Syria, you know, what, 10 years ago now, where Putin exposed the connection between ISIS, so-called, and the U.S. And if you remember, on this very show, I talked about the condemnation of Russian attacks on ISIS. And the connection between the U.S. and ISIS was so close that Russian military planners were not sending or not communicating with Americans anymore because they would deliberately protect them. They would deliberately give wrong coordinates, incorrect coordinates. The fact that they were trying to deal with Americans at all is a mistake, but it became very, very clear very, very early that ISIS, which came out of nowhere with billions of dollars, was a direct creation and, you know, created and led by Western intelligence, specifically the U.S. So the evidence that this was a Ukrainian operation using an American client is overwhelming. You don't have to be a genius to figure this out. But if Kiev had something to do with it, then, of course, the U.S. had something to do with it. And the intelligence agencies were destroyed shortly after the incident. And it's an obvious connection. And it's very clear this is the if any attack is justified, it's this one on these centers. And in destroying them, again, yes, should have been done a long time ago, but the point is to keep them from being able to plan anything like this, again, at least locally. Russia's stance has been to avoid not just civilian casualties, but any kind of escalation. And finally, the dam. I know that's a bad metaphor, but the dam's broke. And this is going to become more and more frequent from the Russian military. Emmanuel Macron, you know, we know what he is. His popularity rating, you have different numbers over the last month, something like between 20 and 25%, although I think that's probably a high rating. It's funny that so many of the, when they're comparing the popularity ratings of leaders, they keep Russia out. Because it's really India, Russia, and China that have by far the most popular political leadership. Macron, who is a Rothschild employee, he worked for one of their main banks right after being the finance inspector in Paris. And he's been, well, he goes back and forth as to what he wants to do. He says mealy-mouthed things like sending additional, actual combat troops should not be excluded. He says, dumb things like that. But the military has denied a lot of this. Given what sort of a man he is, he's ignorant about this situation. Never served in the military, despite the fact that he was that very last generation that military service was mandatory. He figured a way out of that. But his outbursts are not rational ones. They're belligerent. They're over-emotional. And, of course, this puts everyone else, more sober people in Paris, in a very bad position. And as time goes on, he just makes it much worse. The fact that that man, who was the most hated politician in France a couple of years ago, got reelected, shows that nothing here is real. But in 2024, the notion that French infantry is going to be able to do anything in Ukraine, keep in mind now the Russian military is probably the most experienced major military in the world. Now, data from the Russian Defense Ministry, and there's also a few other sources, that French mercenaries have been, their casualty rate, as of a few days ago, is 41%. As of last week, there were about 14,000 foreign personnel killed in action, and that's what you can absolutely verify. I think at the beginning of March, there were about 360 French mercenaries, and almost 200 have been killed. And they're also talking about the use of the Foreign Legion. Keep in mind, the Foreign Legion is a unit of the French military. It's not like this some a national force. You're talking about 2,000 of them. Foreign Legion, of course, comes from all over the world. Extremely harsh training, but they have no experience in anything like this. It was, I think, the 15th, maybe, of January, Moscow launched one of their very high-quality weapons at the headquarters of French mercenaries, and it was packed with them. Almost 100 of these guys were killed, another 20 wounded. And I've heard a few people say that, well, that means the Russian military wiped out 40% of all French mercenaries in one strike. Again, it's take casualty rates with a grain of salt. Every country lies about it. But again, part of Russia's priority was to minimize those. Again, at its own expense. It minimizes its own casualties. It minimizes civilian casualties. But that, at least in part, explains the slow movement of the invasion in the first 6 months. I got an email that the head of the so-called Norman Brigade, a guy named Ratelli, 36 years old. He was killed in the counterattack on Belgorod, which means he most certainly was a part of this attack. The point being to derail the Russian presidential election, which everyone knew Putin couldn't lose if he tried. He was actually in the Canadian Army for a while, this guy. This recently room temperature man has been there since the very beginning, in fact. and the so-called Norman Brigade, which should not be confused with anything that usually goes by the term Norman, had Canadian, American, British, and a handful elsewhere in this brigade. In other words, the French experience there has so far been disastrous. You know, French television is loaded with these idiots. You know, every NATO country has its group of paid so-called experts, and the slogan being, well, they'll fight if they're targeted by Russian troops. But of course, if they're on Ukrainian territory, they're automatically combatants. That's their purpose there, and they're clearly legitimate targets. Now, what their role would be, as of right now, some of them are just their advisors. Although, you know, again, there's this huge language barrier. And as I've said last month, maybe the month before, that they've abandoned Western warfighting tactics and have reverted to the Russian version, which turns out to be far better. Don't question it. French Foreign Legion has the harshest training outside of the Russian, actually. But in this extremely intense, very high-threat environment, with new weapon systems they have zero experience with, and all of their Russia's long-range hypersonic strike capabilities, they're not going to be able to do very much. One of my friends quoted one of the State Duma deputies, Peter Tolstoy, who actually is related to the famous writer. And in response to these very feminine French outbursts, said that the Russian armed forces will destroy all French soldiers appearing on Ukrainian soil. They will be sent back to France in coffins. He then went on to say that Macron won't be the one coming for them. And the French have to understand the consequences. And the very fact that Macron is so unpopular, he's not even dealing with the financial stuff where he actually had some education and experience. He's not even coming close to that. This is his number one obsession. But it's a legitimate warning. No one wants to kill the cream of European manhood, which is what happens in these wars. World War I and World War II destroyed millions of the best of European men, which is, you know, it's great tragedy. And yet, France is, like most Western countries, on the verge of total dissolution. You know, Russia and France are both well-armed, although I think these days that's less and less the case for the West. But Russia is so dominant in these areas, especially in the high-tech sector as far as military stuff goes. Again, these are state-owned Russian defense production agencies. These aren't for-profit entities like you have in the West. But the only thing I think the French have is that submarine launched the M51, where there's a claim that it has a range of about 6,500 miles, and it carries the a thermonuclear warhead if necessary. 100 kilotons is what I'm told. But that's really it. But it's tiny when you compare it to the RS-28, Russian, the Sarmat, which is far superior in pretty much every way, both in yield, range, and accuracy. The Russian missile has the so-called fractional orbital bombardment system, which really makes its range completely, you know, effectively unlimited. And a few other people have sent me stuff on this. And the Sarmat is, there's nothing like it on the planet. So you have people like Vincent Arbitier, who I think is a colonel, retired colonel in the French Army. They're talking about non-conventional weaponry. He said it on French television. There's no other way to describe it other than being totally unhinged. The RS-28 can wipe out something like 30 urban targets at once. But this is what the French are messing with. Now, on the other hand, NATO equipment, I've talked about this before, has been disastrous. One of the constants you'll notice from the Korean War onward is the complete underestimation of the opponents of the U.S. Remember, enemies, especially today, are constructed. They're not analyzed. And Americans, the French, they're making plans based on what they think is a third world country with an unpopular leader that's on the verge of either revolt or collapse. That's the fantasy that they have, and that's the baseline upon which they build their plans. And of course, this is one of the reasons, whether it be political, militarily, or economically, that their predictions are always wrong. The best of Western conventional equipment has been destroyed and continues to be destroyed. There's no way to even catalog it all. It's extremely depressing if you think that Kiev is doing anything right. The air defense systems have been wiped out now for some time. Each one, like the SAMP-T and Skynex, I'm not an expert on how they operate, but I do know the price tag is between $200 and $300 million each. The Leopard 2A4 have been, you know, wiped out. The Abrams, this wildly overhyped entity, and the Challenger, or the second Challenger from the tank from Britain. And this implies that Kiev even has the manpower, that they even have the resources or the training, or a unified command structure, or a competent command, anything like that, to, even if they had all of this equipment in good condition, could use it properly or even coordinate it with all the other units and branches. There really is nothing left of the SAMs or the NA SAMs air defenses, and of course the Patriot, which is far more expensive. Kiev's air defenses are history. The NA SAMs, it's the Norwegian Advanced Surface Air Missile System, destroyed very close to the front, actually. And they were destroyed by the Iskander missile system and the even superior Tornado S. At every level here, Russian equipment is better, is faster, and is less expensive, because the profit motive isn't relevant. There was there's newer versions even of older models, the BM-30, the multiple launch rocket system, the 200 mile range. I think it's a GLONASS 9M. Another one with about 300 miles, and the NATO source SAM systems have been wiped out entirely. And the Zazala, which is, again, another state, actually connected to the Kalashnikov conglomerate, state-owned, lands at the so-called kamikaze drones. I think the other word for them is loitering munitions. And the French-made Caesar, the Paladin, the Archer from Sweden, self-propelled howitzer systems have been annihilated. And there's no way that the West can replace these quickly, or that the West even has the resources to do this. And of course, it's not just the equipment that's being destroyed, it's the crews, whatever they have left. This isn't something you just, you know, read the French language or English language instruction manual and you know how to integrate it with an overarching command system. Kiev doesn't have that. The Zykron, the scramjet power maneuvering hypersonic cruise missile, scramjet is just a super fast, you know, the combustion is done at very high speed, which is, and even though the patent for that was registered back in the early 70s, the Russians have perfected it. The coastal defense, it's on the land, the Batson coastal defense system, Mach 9 speed. Zykron is 3-4 times faster than its counterparts in the West, especially in France. I don't know if you've noticed recently, but there have been a couple of very suspiciously arriving videos on YouTube about how the Su-57, Russian, fifth generation military jet now, is terrible and it's awful, despite its rather extraordinary performance. The stealth cruise missile, I think it's the KH-69, 300-mile range, and it's very difficult to pick up by radar or anything else. Keep in mind that in using all of this first-rate equipment, you now have an incredibly large, experienced Russian and integrate it, which is a hard part, integrating all this within an overarching strategy, both political, military, and all the branches. This is now second nature to these guys. And the opposite is the case elsewhere, not just in Kiev either. A couple of weeks ago, I think they had half a dozen Abrams destroyed in a day or two. The T-72, using that the reflex, the anti-tank guided missile. And this is one of the things that's completely destroyed the Abrams, the M1, and the M2 Bradley, the infantry fighting vehicle. The Russians don't even have an estimate of how many of them have been destroyed, because there's simply so many. The HIMARS has always been overestimated. The Abrams is overestimated. But of course, I don't want to come down just on the nature of the equipment. It's also on the nature of people who are running it. Some of you may remember when the war in Afghanistan, the Soviet war in Afghanistan, began, the West noticed that they were new types of crews manning the Afghan Army's tanks, the Soviet Afghan Army's tanks. These guys didn't have beards, and it meant that Soviets were taking over these more technical areas that the Afghans simply couldn't man properly. So far, that hasn't happened here. And I think most of the men who would go over there in any combat capacity knows that they're not going to last long. They don't have the experience. They don't have the motivation and the extremely high morale of the Russian infantry. The fact that Putin won, we talked about last week, with such a huge margin, shows exactly what's going on. His popularity never really went below 70 or 75, depending on the circumstances, but now it's probably permanently over 80. If the average Western politician, NATO politician, has an approval rating in the 20s, and I think that's being very generous. NATO says that their SAM systems can shoot down the Kinzhal hypersonic missile. So far, we have no evidence of that. The Iskander, which is a bit older, has neutralized so much in you know, what's left of the Kievan arsenal. Now, almost every week I get on here and I detail the ginormous losses that Kiev has dealt with. Therefore, its only option at this point is terrorism and, of course, their control over the media. But even the media has permitted this idea that there really isn't much of a chance here. So now this is a point where if the West wants to get directly involved, which would be suicidal and would bring governments down, much less has brought governments down in the past, this would be the moment. The Belgorod attack has a lot to do with removing attention from the gigantic losses. And the very fact that there were mercenaries killed in the counterstrike suggests that these often are not Ukrainians. Now, whether that's going to continue is another matter. That's a huge decision. Macron seems to have made it, but I don't know if this is just posturing. A man who, this very effeminate, a man who knows zero, I mean, less than zero, about any of the stuff that we're talking about here. And I don't want to get the impression either that we're talking about just Russian infantry. You have local volunteers, now far larger than anything that Ukraine can muster, coming down from Belarus. And these border cities are forming their own militias here. The FSB actually destroyed at least 18 tanks and 23 armored vehicles on that fateful day, March 14th, 15th. Of course, Russia is now more than in full control of this border. So the fighting, and there's NATO volunteers here. The fighting here shows on these border areas that this is mere terrorism. There's no overarching goal here. They only destroyed civilian targets. Now, they were all evacuated. Thank God for that. They've used NATO, had the Mi-8 helicopters, a couple of them. 30 men landed maybe less than a mile from the Russian border and crossed it on foot. And I'm not sure if they thought that they had the element of surprise, but they did not, and they were wiped out. One of them, I have no verification of this, but there was a group ran directly into a minefield where they were neutralized just by stepping on the wrong thing. And it's very gruesome. It seems that the Kiev regime and this NATO equipment, you know, it's fine when you're attacking bridges and dams, Crimea and Zaporozhye and places like that. But when it comes, and I've said this a million times, when it comes to an actual motivated, well-trained, regular military, all this stuff seems to completely fall off. The myth of NATO superiority in any of these areas has been completely destroyed for anyone who wants to learn about it. The best NATO armor, air defense systems, whatever, were destroyed, especially in that ridiculous counteroffensive last year. But nothing is changing now. And I've heard from more than one source that the SAMT air defense system have been wiped out in Ukraine. Each one, by the way, again, I've heard, is between $200 and $300 million. All of these, you know, American military industrial complex members have huge PR, including on places like YouTube and TikTok. And so much of this has been on film. The Leopard tanks being completely destroyed. APCs, the whole bunch of the Dutch-made, I forget what they're called. So the more recent Russian combat operation, that's, you know, how long is the regime going to continue financially and militarily to destroy their entire stock of weaponry? Especially when you have the West trying to start a war in Taiwan. You know what's happening there. And you also know, of course, in the Israeli situation. The West doesn't have the equipment for the Ukrainian campaign, let alone anything that's happening elsewhere. The French economy is in an awful state. Macron demands that it's Ukraine that should be prioritized, not the collapsing economy. There is no growth forecast anymore. Spending, social spending is going to be cut by 10 billion euros. Euro and the dollar are almost identical. Total drops in productivity. There is no productivity anymore. And as you know, most of the economy now is being taken over by women and non-whites. They're extremely overtaxed. And to think that this man could win an election without fraud is ridiculous. Public debt now in France is over 3 trillion as of last year. Most of it coming under this guy. You know, 16 billion in spending has already been cut to try to reduce this deficit. But at this point, with compound interest, there is no chance of repaying it, which means that Rothschild employees like Macron are going to continue to have some kind of power, at least be the administrators of far more powerful forces. And that completely excludes the sanctions on Russia, which has backfired entirely. And yet, with all of this, they increased the French military budget 40% in 1 year. I shouldn't say 1 year, no. These are forecasts from 2024, 25, 26. You're talking about a $413 billion increase. And yet, 3 billion euros in military aid in this ridiculous agreement with Zelensky. On every front, the regime is failing. On every single front, there is nothing. There is no claim the regime has made in the last 10 years that hasn't been completely debunked, whether economically or militarily. Jens Stoltenberg, the NATO Secretary General, is in panic mode. Who, by the way, as you know, admitted that the West started this war, or that the war is far older than 2022. And of course, people who've been reading me for a long time are more than well aware of it. Ukrainians have been rationing their military equipment, ammunition, food supplies for a long time. Morale doesn't exist. And there's nothing they could do about it. This is a humiliating loss for the regime. And it makes me feel very good. Very good. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.